The health of your children goes back seven generations.
Seven, crikey.
Seven back generations within the birthing of each of those generations.
Wow.
So we don't dilute or change a great deal through those seven generations.
Wow.
And there is a particular science that she was studying, which I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I found that really fascinating because the health that I'm creating for myself and when I was birthing my sons now is relevant to my grandchildren and it's relevant to every generation following.
Yeah.
So it's not just about you.
Yeah.
It's about you being the healthiest version of you is really relevant for every generation that follows.
What is personal branding?
It's how you are perceived by other people. Really, that's the simplest way to describe it.
Mm.
You can do whatever you can do, but it's all got to do with how someone else perceives you as your brand.
Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you want other people to perceive you favorably, what is an uncompromisable component of your branding?
Be consistent. I love that that going back into history and understanding.
What do you think you get out of it? Can you drill down there for us? What does it do for you?
I think it gives me a sense of permanence.
Mm.
That even though I'm not permanent and they weren't permanent, each generation continues on. Mm. So there's a permanence in who we are as three generations.
Mm.
And again, that's just the first word that popped in without a great deal of thought. So I think that's part of it, knowing that there's people come before me, of course there is. It's that sense of there's a continuum.
Connectedness?
Yeah.
I'm not even that. It's like a continuum.
Excuse me, dear people, you are more part of the human race than you are Australian. You are you are more part of humanity than you are Tanzanian.
Mm.
You are more part of humanity, you are first humanity than you are American. Culture is a conditioning of the mind. Well, the dear Chipster, how lucky are we?
Oh, we're always lucky, but we might be a little bit luckier than usual today. Hey?
Well, mate, not just because our guests. Well, I'm talking about the whole darn podcast, mate. We get every week. It's better than a book.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard you saying that this morning, and I agree. It is like it's like getting all the best bits of a book and just fed straight to you.
Mate, I'm not going to divulge to the listeners your age, but you're a young pup, mate. At my stage of life, I get the privilege of not just reading a book, as I do, but getting a beautiful guest like Janine Vosper here this morning.
Janine, how are you?
I'm great.
How much are we going to learn?
Well, I've already learned a lot in the pre-episode briefing. So,
mate, what about Narelle Gaddy? Remember that one?
Mm, hey? I do.
And then there was Lara Arden.
Lara Arden, she had a lot to share, didn't she?
Oh, absolutely. Yvonne Hasker.
Mm, yeah, I didn't know what to expect with Yvonne, and it was a really interesting conversation.
Mate, fascinating. Have you ever met anybody that grew up in East Germany during the regime?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It gives you such perspective, it's just fascinating from a historical point
of view. What I'm trying to say to you, dear listeners, can you actually step into our shoes just for a moment, dear listeners?
They can't get into mine, mate. I'm only a size 5.5.
Because we get this enormous privilege to be on your side of the fence, listeners. We are also the learners. We're not just the facilitators here and the co-hosts. And we're so lucky, Chip, hey? Just to be learning on a weekly basis about this subject of how to find a little greater joy in our life.
A little bit greater joy, a little bit more meaning,
Chip,
and a little bit more love.
Are you becoming a more loving human being?
Well, I have to turn my Grinch card in if I said yes to that, but I really think I am.
Have you got any evidences?
I am certainly less grumpy.
Yeah.
You know?
Isn't that fascinating?
It really is, and it's wonderful to be able to clock that in yourself.
Mate, is that because you're more aware?
Yes. 100%.
Elaborate, mate. I just used that word. I picked it out of nowhere.
Did you now? No, well, it's an awareness around physical sensations I might associate with anger that before I would have simply paid no attention to, let get out of hand. And then before you know it, I'm actually angry. Yeah. These days I recognize that and then I can just put them aside.
Yeah.
It's about acknowledging and then releasing. But you can't release something you don't know you're holding.
Do you know how much how proud I am to be able to work with you? Because I actually see that in you.
Oh, you're a good man.
And I watch it. Oh, I can't say on a weekly basis, but it becomes obvious to me that the young man that I met, I don't know how long ago it was now. Is it a year?
Year and a half-ish.
Is that right? Yeah, is it 18 months? It can't be, mate.
It is, I'm afraid. Oh, my good man, we're both getting on.
I can't believe that.
Mm.
That young man there, mate, you're a softer, more mellower version.
Gentler. Yeah. Good. Well, I'm glad. I love to see you coming to your own realizations too. And it's inspiring because it just says, like, you never need to stop.
Mate, we need to stop because our listeners think we're setting this up just for a mutual admiration society. That's not the case. This is a beautiful, impromptu, spontaneous opening, dear listeners. But for you, I do have some good news because that Lara Arden, that beautiful woman, she said to me after her podcast that she did not see you as the co-host. Don't be offended.
I'm trying.
She said, you are the listener's ears.
Oh, that's perfect.
She said, you are there. On behalf of them, you are the Inquisition.
Can we just say inquirer? Inquisition sounds decidedly medieval, you know?
I think that's what I meant.
Yeah.
I may have got the word wrong.
Yeah, just in a beautifully burning way. I love it.
But she said, you're there on behalf of the listeners to make sure that we're just not telling story.
Great.
We're just not creating environment for a story to be told. You're on behalf of listeners saying, oh, so what about this story? What did you learn there, Lara? What in this episode, what are we supposed to be learning? Help us, Chip.
That's fantastic. Oh, I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly what I'm trying to be.
Well, that's great because that's where I'm trying to move you.
Yeah. And then lock me up. All right. Loud and clear, Captain.
Welcome, dear listeners, to another episode of A Journey with Bernie and the Chipster. We did not hear it from you, Janine. It's compulsory that our guests actually join. We're going to have to say that one more time.
Okay, I'll be in this time. Janine, I've just been enjoying the banter. I'm absorbed.
You're a good lady.
Janine, you are part of
A Journey with Bernie and Chipster.
We are episode. I won't put a number to it, but it's in the 70s. Hey, I'll tell you what, I will put a number to. Is how many days, how many weeks has our website been launched, mate? Take a guess there.
Four weeks. I reckon we're 4 weeks young.
And what should we be reminding our listeners that they have the opportunity to do through that beautifully chip-made website?
Crafted website. We want them to go straight to the offering, this week's latest offering from our guest.
Yeah.
You get a free ebook or some kind of free gift. And you get to directly interface with the learnings that guest provides.
Which is sensational because, for example, they can still receive from the benefit. What's the name?
Louise.
Louise Bennett. They can still receive her anthology of poems.
Mm, it's always
there. They can still receive Mary Scott's E Coach manual book there. You know, it's all there for you. All you got to do is get onto the website. The website is
journeywithbernie.co. That's .co, not .com. .co gives us a little bit of global flavor. You know what I'm saying?
You don't tell them www, mate, or do you leave that one out?
No, that's fine. We don't need that anymore. Are you still www, mate? I just saved you hours out of your year. Take that away.
JourneyWithMurnie.co. Go there, dear listeners, because we've got some gifts there for you. It'll be obvious which button you press.
You can't miss it.
Just press it and away you go. The process will start. Great to have you on board, dear listeners. Janine Vosper, how are you coping with this introduction?
I'm not sure. I'm rarely lost for words, Bernie, but I'm not sure.
Are you enjoying it?
Definitely.
Yeah. We'll take that.
We're just two average guys, Janine, who happen to think there is another way.
Mm-hmm.
Another way. And that's what this podcast is all about. And the reason why I invited you here is because I know you've got some contributions for whatever the other way is. How about we start? Introduce yourself. Let us know what you do. This business of yours called Speech Perfect. Hello. What is it?
It's some. Well, we could spend the next hour talking about it because I've been
no doubt.
You've got 3 minutes, Janine.
No, I've been in business for 4 decades.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of experience over that time.
Yeah.
But what it all boils down to, whether it is sales training or speaker training, whether it is helping people really just structure what they want to achieve and how they're going to achieve it,
yeah.
it talks about how you can personally brand yourself,
yeah.
how you can stand out,
yeah.
because you've got all of that tucked away and people will see you in a certain way and you've got your message very clear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, the way you deliver this coaching is you got your own podcast.
I do.
Hello. Yeah. Guess what? We're so liberal here. We want you to actually let everybody know what it is.
And I have.
We have no competitors.
I have had the We Are Women podcast for about 7 years.
We Are Women.
That's fantastic.
Podcast. Yeah. Spotify.
It's on all of the channels. You'll find it across everything.
Yeah, it'll be everywhere. It goes out everywhere.
I don't think you'll be on the same amount that we are. But
oh, it's not a competition, Bernie, except it kind of is.
Oh, I love this competitive nature. Yes, I have been interviewing women from all around the world who've got an incredible amount of value to offer, and their voices don't necessarily get heard elsewhere.
Okay.
So they do on the We Are Women podcast.
So just take a little breath right now, because I'm asking you to reflect on some of those incredible, wonderful podcasts that you have delivered to all your listenership. And one or two of those podcasts that stand out. Come on, promote a couple.
I was having a think about this because you did ask me to think about it with 160 episodes.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It was hard to go back because I'm very much in each episode enjoying it as I'm in the episode.
Yeah.
So to think about which one's a favorite, but I do have one that it was quite a few years ago now, and it was called Patient 71.
Patient 71.
Great title.
And it was, and it's the name of a book that Julie Randall has written, and it was about her story with, she got stage 4 melanoma and was given, and she's working right up to that realization, I'm very sick, and wasn't aware. And then she started doing research, as you would think, because the doctors had just said, go home and die.
Yeah. Mm.
And she found a trial in the US, which had only for US citizens, and they already had 70 people on the trial, and that was going to be the maximum.
Ah, right.
She traveled from Australia to Portland, and she pushed away into it.
Wow.
She just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And she had to keep going back for all of these treatments over the years and leave her children and husband and family behind to do it. But when I spoke to her, I think it was 2019.
Okay.
And this was 10 years prior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It saved her life. But what I got out of it, though, it's a fabulous story.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it's that commitment. That not to give up. That was that commitment to this. My life is important. It's incredibly important.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's are we half in or half out?
Yeah, okay.
And she was fully in.
Yeah. Fully into what?
Fully into that commitment. I'm going to save myself. There's nothing else. There's nothing else that's going to divert me from this.
Yeah.
And what, it was the matter with the, you know, the having to leave family and children and the cost and everything that was involved.
What is it about commitment of that level that really appeals to you? And why does that commitment make such a good story, do you think?
For me, having commitment is a is a high on a value for me. I believe that if you put your hand up for something, and I'm really good at putting my hand up for lots of things. I'm on a lot of different boards and work a lot of not-for-profits. If you're going to do it, do it. Some people will do it because they want to contribute, but they then don't believe they have the resources or the capacity to help, so they drop off. Other people do it because it looks good at the time. But I'm a huge believer in if you start something, then you need to commit to it. But I'm also a believer in if you're looking at your business and you're going a particular way and you're really committed to it, then you keep hitting wall after wall after wall after wall to go, hang on a minute, maybe this isn't the right way for me.
Yeah.
And to not be less committed, but to be aware and pay attention to what's going on around you.
I want both of you to respond to this because I'm now listening very carefully to both your conversations here.
Okay.
And what I'm actually hearing is that the higher commitment is I'm committed to fully live. To be fully alive in whatever one's definition of that is. And if, for example, in business is part, it's an extension of you and you're operating business because you want it to be fully alive, a full extension of who you are, if it's hitting brick walls, I'm going to find another way. Because she was wanted to be fully alive, I'm not going to let life down here. If this is what I have to do and go to Portland and be patient, 71, I will be fully alive. I've just made a title out of the highest level of commitment. Highest level. I'm fully committed to live my life fully. How do you relate to that?
I have never considered it at that extreme level before, but it was, as you're speaking, it's truly resonating with me.
Okay. Good.
You know, we're of the same era, Bernie. Yeah. We're good models made in the 50s.
Yeah, but I'm looking at you and you guess what? 40 what?
I love you. Thank you. And I've had so many people in recent times that aren't here still with us.
Yeah.
So if you've got the opportunity to be still present on this plane that we call Earth and living this existence as in the bodies that we've got, then why not make the most of it?
Yeah.
So profoundly agree with that. And I think I kind of believe that, we get one go around at least in this body and this mind. And I can get behind that. There seems to be some suggestions that something like reincarnation is possible. Anyway, but we who you are now, you get one shot. So I think that highlights the importance of maximizing your life. And that doesn't just mean the easily recognizable fun stuff. Yeah. It's like Chad Foreman said, he was quoting a Buddhist master. He said, if you can't have fun doing the dishes, you're not going to have as much fun as you could with whatever you're doing after you finish the dishes.
I love that.
Yeah. So that's how I relate.
So there's the first actionable of the day, Chip.
Enjoy the dishes.
Enjoy the dishes.
I really try to enjoy unstacking the dishwasher these days.
Forget any other fun. If it can't start with doing the dishes and enjoying it, singing while you wipe them, then there's your foundation of fun. Yeah. Point of the story is there's a call, is how much are you loving the journey of maximizing your life? Are you thinking about how do I maximize my life? Or are you still existing but not fully living? Ooh, it's not a question to hear. It's a question just out there for our listeners to contemplate. You're still existing, but how much are you living? Hey, tell us more about the podcast. Give us some of the topics you've covered in your podcast, because that's what I've done my research. I've actually got them here. I'm checking them off.
Some of the most diverse subjects. Talk about relationships. So relationships with your we've covered with your children, how to build great relationships with your children, with your partner.
No, stop
people.
There with children and partner. We'll come back to the other topics here. Okay. If you had one piece of advice on parents, be aware of this. If you want to have great connection with your kids, there's one fundamental thing that really is virtually uncompromisable. What must you do? What must you offer?
You know what just popped into my head is to treat your children as if they're your grandchildren.
That's interesting.
I never thought about that before until you just said that, and I often go with what I think at the time.
Yeah. Why did you say that?
Because my definition of my children are a 40-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay. I love my children. I have to. You know, you birthed them.
There's a biological imperative.
It came with the rules.
It comes with the territory.
You love them. And your role as a parent, I believe, is not to raise children. It's to raise adults.
Yeah.
Because you want people to be able to function in society. You don't want them to be children all their lives and try be adult children.
Yeah.
But I'm in love with my grandchildren.
Yeah.
It's a different space.
Yeah.
So I tend to not let them get away with things. I'm still that monitoring grandmother, but I allow them more to be themselves. And I don't know whether that's because it's 2024 and when I was raising mine was 40 years ago. You know, it was the 80s.
Yeah.
But I allow them more to be the human beings that they are.
I like that.
Yeah. Do you think that's also because you've got a generation in between, right? So they're less an expression of you yourself directly.
Mm. Mm. I totally agree with that.
And that gives you a little bit of distance. We're talking about distance off mic. So, yeah, you can better approach that situation. Really cool.
Chipster, I'm actually thinking, I can't remember the podcast, but I've got a few voices in the back of the head over here and I've forgotten who they are. But they did speak about how easy it is for parents to project their want onto their child. Therefore, we treat our child so preciously. We almost want to mold and shape their direction. Mm. Johnny Kudis, he said the helicopter parent is gone.
Yeah, and
but you'll be pleased to know, Bernie, that they've been replaced by the lawnmower parent, right? The lawnmower parent, Janine, is the one who creates the path for their child and says, you will go down this path. I've molded and shaped it for you. The little problem is when the kid gets off path at a 20, 25-year-old, they know where to turn. They haven't been trained to create their own path. So where do they go? Back to mum and dad. You know, it's a bit an exaggerated image, but it was a beautiful image of a lot that I think does go on. What I hear you saying with our grandchildren is you don't feel as responsible to mold and shape their direction and their future, and you give them the space to discover that themselves as their own little people.
Yes. As I said, I hadn't even thought about it until you asked the question, and that's my experience now because I get to experience with grandchildren.
G'day, listeners, you silky-haired mountain goats on the craggy slopes of Mount Contemplation. It's Chip here, and forgive my interruption, but I couldn't let that thought pass without hitting you with another of my loaded questions, because I think that's a powerful concept that Janine just brought up, the concept of treating your children like your grandchildren. And the reason I think it's so powerful is because it creates space. So much human unhappiness stems from our inability to separate ourselves from the rest of the world, our relationships, our obligations, our expectations. We identify so strongly with those things that we end up letting them crowd in on us. And then no one has the space to just be who they really are, and it becomes impossible for any of us to chart a path to that modified existence Bernie and I are always banging on about. So here's the question. Another two-parter. First part for parents, second part for everybody. Parents, imagine that your children are your grandchildren. How much space does that open up in your mind? Now, for the rest of us, imagine your inner child, that one whose fears still dominate your own mental landscape, even though you're all grown up right now, that one you still identify far too strongly with. Because, hey, that once was you. Now, imagine that's not your inner child. Imagine it's your inner grandchild. How much space does that open up in your mind?
We're getting some take-home pay here, baby.
It's just bang, bang, bang. This is beautiful. Too. This is what I come to work for, you know?
I got a couple of other topics here because guess what? Here's the list that Janine gave me. Manifestation. First of all, I know it sounds a funny question, but I want you to explain, what is manifestation?
Manifestation is creating something that isn't tangible to the tangible, I suppose, okay. is what I would class
yeah.
it as.
Yeah, I like that.
In what you've just described there, Janine, you still haven't described the how it happens.
How it happens?
Yeah, you've said you just know it's going to happen, but you haven't described, okay, here I know it's going to happen, and between it happening, there's a gap in there about how it happens. Yeah. I'm looking at the chipster over here. I'm going to throw it at you, and I want you to analyze me.
Mm-hmm.
All right? This is how – have you got to know how it happens?
I do, yeah.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shall I go first or you?
No, I went first last time. You go.
All right. Woo, woo, woo time.
All right. Yeah, good, good. Because mine's not.
I love woo, woo time.
Yeah, I know. You go, woo me.
Let's just put it in the hypothetical category, although I am saying I actually have current belief in this. Mm-hmm. Right. If we are source, if we are spirit, therefore spirit flows in me, with me, through me. But it also flows through you, Chip. Also flows through you, Janine. The same person in Afghanistan. Same people in India. It flows through each and every one of us. If we're also heading down the pathway, what's the pathway? The pathway is learning to touch source. To stop the monkey mind interfering and its interventions that distract us away from being source. If we are starting to taste and touch source, then what we then wish, what we then ask for is given to source. But source doesn't take a day to speak to someone somewhere else in the world. Source does like this. And so somewhere else, someone else is also thinking some of the same things. And somehow in these micro flashes, it's taken in on board. And somehow source brings us together. But I did not say that source is the chess player saying, oh, guess what, I'll make this happen for you. It's until you're in, got a little taste and touch with source and people are also experiencing it, that source takes the message, takes the wish, takes the preferred, the desired action out there into source and spirit, and it's picked up and it arrives. Woo, 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 woo.
Oh, I'm interested in that, but I'm interested in what Chip's got to say.
I am too. That's why, because I know Chip's very good at taking the bullshit out of this.
Yeah, we might have to nail that down to earth, mightn't we? Well, to me, there's a lot of things that go in there, and we could go off on five different tangents here. Let me just try to keep it concise. I believe that when you're manifesting, when you have that belief mindset, that is simply a mindset that furnishes you with the fortitude to act in such a way as to bring those goals to you. And it also gives you an attitude and an energy that other people pick up on, which makes them more inclined to bring you what you want. As far as the wooer parts of that, I do think there is something called confirmation bias, whereby if you're alerted to a phenomenon, you tend to see it more, and then you form a belief that, this is happening because of something you've done, rather than simply that you're noticing it more often. So there may be a little bit of that in play in terms of manifesting something that you have no control over and it's still being delivered to you.
Dear listeners, you just know why Chip is here.
I don't disagree with either of you.
Neither do I.
No. Yeah. The other part that you just slightly touched on, and I think is an important factor, is that taking action to create it.
Yeah.
That you, if you want the car park, you can't be in a different area, or you can't be driving on a different road if you want to achieve the results you want in your relationships.
Yeah.
Then you need to be focused in those relationships. If you want to achieve the results in your business, you need to be doing the work to get there, to do that.
Yeah.
But it's knowing that the result will be there.
Yeah.
But you can't just just sit back and just wait for it to happen.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to have the radar out, and the radar needs to be in the right region.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, that was good. That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. Interesting. Hey, dear listeners, all of it could be bullshit. But isn't it fun exploring, you know?
That's what we're about, exploration.
Two average guys to think there just might be another way.
Another way.
Consider this, dear
people. A modified life.
Health and body, Janine. Mm-hmm. A podcast here. It says here you did a podcast, investigate health and body. What did you discover?
I've done a few on health and body, and I actually have a background. I was 10 years, I was an aerobic instructor.
Okay.
So I came from that space, and it was the second year ever when nationally they did fitness leaders courses.
Yeah.
So it's quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And we learned all about, you know, how the body works and the systems in the body and nutrition and all of that. So I always find that very interesting concept to investigate with different ways.
Yeah.
What I found with one of the interviews that we had with Hayley, she took, and I cannot remember the terminology that she used with this, but our women's health, the health of your children goes back seven generations.
Seven, crikey.
Seven back generations within the birthing of each of those generations.
Wow.
So we don't dilute or change a great deal through those seven generations.
Wow.
And there is a particular science that she was studying, which I can't remember.
Yeah.
I found that really fascinating because – the health that I'm creating for myself and when I was birthing my sons now is relevant to my grandchildren, and it's relevant to every generation following.
Yeah.
So it's not just about you.
Yeah.
It's about you being the healthiest version of you is really relevant for every generation that follows.
Let's pause on that one, because I think that might be powerful in terms of getting people to connect with a responsibility for the future. Right? Like, because I feel like in terms of, you know, wherever you land on climate change, I think that we can all agree that in various ways we're having a detrimental effect on the planet, right? And so, but I think, you know, we're not making big enough changes on that because we can't connect to this idea that we're responsible for the future.
Yeah.
If you hear Janine talk about how, hey, you're kind of responsible for the seventh generation with what you do to yourself.
Yeah.
That might be a way of making it a bit more visceral and getting us to think more long term, which is typically really beneficial.
I think there are simple evidences that of what you just said, Janine, because, you know, I've heard people say, looking at their grandchild and then looking at the photograph of the great grandfather, oh, you two look alike, and yet there's three generations difference between each other, you know? So it seems to me natural that things are passed on from generation to generation. It's, you're not just starting afresh when you were born.
Yeah.
You know, Sadhguru would talk about genetic karma.
That's another thing as well.
Well, I don't think it's too far from what you were talking about just then. You know, in seven generations, how much of the individual is as a result of the previous genes of previous generations? And you've got to think there's got to be some. I've got to be somehow like my great-grandfather or great-grandmother. You know, I know that I'm like my mother. Yeah. I know that I'm like my father. That's a generation apart.
Yeah. You know? Do you mean physically?
Oh, physically. I'm talking even character-wise, spiritually-wise too.
Yeah. No, there's good evidence that all those kinds of traits are heritable for sure. But then, and then, you know, it's a really fascinating subject, because then how does the environment interact with it? How do the actual experiences of your mother and father while they were raising you impact you?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all connected. Yeah. That's what I always.
I'm laughing to myself right now because I am about to very quickly tell a story, and that if my brother and my sister hear this, they may be challenging me. But not so long ago,
we all have different memories of our childhood.
Not so long ago, I'm with my mum and dad. God bless them. They're still alive, 92, 86 years of age. Wow. And unusually, my mother is talking about her mother, who I think passed away when mum was 11. But mum has a great memory of her mother, Sabrina. Jeez, I hope I got that right.
I hope so too. Beautiful name.
It might be Sabrina.
Anyway, mum's giving this description to my sister, my brother and I, and we're all in our, you know, post 55s. And in this description, mum is describing the beauty of her mother and the spirit of her mother. And I am leading the inquisitive inquiry into who is Sabina or Sabrina. Please forgive me, Mum, for getting the name wrong. And I happened to say, and Mum, which one of the three of us is most like your mother? And my mother took a breath and she went, you are Verna. She calls me Verna. And you got no idea how delighted I was that it was me that was selected as the spirit of my great grandmother. So even my mother was seeing the genetic connection, over time.
It is. There's something beautiful about feeling that connection to your past too.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's very profound, obviously.
Yeah.
I have photos on a wall in my house, and they're my grandparents and great-grandparents and their parents in a couple of occasions, their wedding photos. And there's generations of wedding photos of these, and looking at them when they were 20, and you know, for my grandparents, my grandmother lived till 97, and I'm very much like her. She's just very stoic and grounded, and right in that space, and that's who I emulate as well as is her. But looking at these beautiful women in their 20s, when you really only knew them from their 70s and 80s, I love that that going back into history and understanding.
Do you think you get out of it? Can you drill down there for us? What does it do for you?
I think it gives me a sense of permanence.
Mm.
That even though I'm not permanent and they weren't permanent, each generation continues on. Mm. So there's a permanence in who we are as three generations.
Mm.
And again, that's just the first word that popped in, that without a great deal of thought. So I think that's part of it, knowing that there's people come before me, it's that sense of there's a continuum.
Connectedness?
Yeah.
Not even that. It's like a continuum.
Yeah.
I understand what you mean. It's difficult to articulate, but I think I understand what you mean.
I'm part of the bigger chain. I'm part of the bigger channel.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very clear evidence that you're a link in a chain that stretches very far back.
And one thing is, yes, look that we've got grandchildren, but to look back and what was their lives like? And I had the opportunity before my Nana passed to take a lot of stories down from her as well, and just learning how different it was.
Yeah. So, there's that contrast. There's just something pleasurable about seeing that and acknowledging that too. Yeah.
You just gave me a chill. The chill was the recognition, whether Adam and Eve is mythical or not, you know, and that's a fascinating topic. Mm-hmm. The whole concept of that we are part of the chain and we're not going forward and the past behind us. We're actually connected in the chain. But is that all the way back to Adam and Eve? If it is, then the chill is, hey, you out there in Czechoslovakia, you out there, excuse me, in Ukraine, you out there in Botswana, we're connected.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
We're part of the chain. We're not separate, you know?
No.
And that concept of equanimity, equalness, Why would we ever want to elevate ourselves as better than or less than? Or less than too,
yeah.
You know? We don't have to see ourselves as less than. But better than? No need to. You are more part of the human race than you are Australian. You are more
like
part. You are more part of humanity than you are Tanzanian. You are more part of humanity. You are first humanity than you are American. Culture is a conditioning of the mind.
G'day, listeners, you sparkling-voiced canaries in the coal mines of self-inquisition. It's Chip here, and forgive my interruption, but I couldn't let that thought pass without hitting you with another of my loaded questions, because Byrne hit upon a subject I've been wrestling with for a while, and that is the benefits and risks inherent in cultures. Now, all cultures have beautiful things in them. All cultures have ugly things in them. I think we can all agree on that. And what I've been contemplating is, how do we retain what's good and useful in our cultures and leave out the crap bits? And I think it gets back once again to this notion of space, because if you're too close to your own culture, you're not going to see it clearly. You're not going to acknowledge the flaws, and that's where the problems, the frictions, the intercultural conflicts like warfare that keep us divided, that's where all those problems come from, this inability to separate ourselves from our own cultures. So here's the question. What if you could see your culture like a visitor, like an alien from another planet with completely virgin eyes? What if you could view your culture not as something you're a part of, but as something you're free to experience? What parts would you choose to experience? And what parts would you choose to avoid?
I want to now start getting into one-sentence answers. I'm going to throw out some questions out there.
Speed round.
All right, speed round. Yeah. And Chip, you can play listener's role. You can play guest role as well, okay? The best gift that one can give to the world is the developing, evolving, mature best I.
And the way to do that is to be kind to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, but nail that down for us. I mean, what does that actually look like? We hear it all the time. What is a practice? What's a morning practice where you can be kind to yourself consciously, intentionally?
One sentence.
Gratitude. Mm-hmm. Recognizing the things to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And do that on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Best gift I can give to the world is to develop and evolve the best of myself.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And this, just to key off what Janine was saying about the spiral, the highest level, I think, of a society would be individuals who have done so much work on themselves that they are secure enough to genuinely believe that I can have what I want without taking from someone else. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I find that so empowering, because it really means to save the world, you've got to get yourself there.
Yeah.
And you are in control of yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's really, that's good news.
Mm-hmm. How do you develop courage? What is courage? How do you develop courage? How do you become courageous?
You have to take risks and you have to get uncomfortable.
Mm. So be comfortable getting uncomfortable.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I would add to that, find a situation to expose yourself to discomfort where tolerating the discomfort is the only work you have to do. If you also have to devote energy to something else while you're tolerating this discomfort, you're probably just going to remove yourself from the discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So like if you want to get better at public speaking, mm-hmm. make sure that you're practicing public speaking in a place that is otherwise safe and comfortable. You know, don't do it in a hot auditorium. You're sweating all the time. Be in an air-conditioned place where the only work you have to do is to deal with that public speaking fear.
Mm-hmm.
Hence why I'm involved in not-for-profit public speaking group, because that gives people that opportunity to do that.
Best tip that both of you have in order to improve your public speaking effectiveness to a audience of 100 people?
Ground yourself.
Meaning? What's ground yourself mean?
Meaning don't be up in your head. put your, actually literally ground yourself, feel that you're really connected to the ground, and think about the words you're saying rather than just saying words.
Mm-hmm. I would say take it even babyer steps. Be prepared. And if that means writing your entire speech out and learning it word for word so that you don't need to have the pressure of improvisation, do that. Begin with that.
I would say is recognize
Can I challenge
Please
that?
Do.
The learning of it, I've seen people in speech contests who have learnt it word for word and then forget.
Mm. And then they're rocked.
They're absolutely rocked and they can't continue because they haven't got those notes with them and they've mm-hmm. just...
Oh, okay. Well, I'd also say when you're beginning there, just you also have the cue cards.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Yeah. And I would say, and this is an advanced paradigm with regard to public speaking, is recognize that the speech has got nothing to do with you. Everything to do with your message. It ain't about you being evaluated. Stop getting up there and thinking that, oh, my God, how good am I looking? Forget it. You're up there, excuse me, to deliver a message. Focus on the message that you've got to give and who you're speaking on behalf of and what is your message and why is it important that the audience actually receives this message? Focus on the message.
So give us some advice on overcoming the very natural tendency to identify with your instrument that's delivering the speech, right, and focusing on the message. Like what can you actually do?
Well, let's start with where you were advocating before, where people are writing it all out. Learn to let go of writing it all out. Start to make it a skeleton. Take a skeleton speech up there. Start to take your dot points up there. You've got to gradually but surely let go of your need to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's your feeling of safety that wants and your feeling of approval that makes you not want to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. So you got to write the whole darn thing out. But the more you let go, here's what you start to feel. The naturalness and spontaneity of the real gift of you starts to come through and connect with the audience. Audiences do not connect with structured minds.
Mm-hmm.
They connect with heart. And the person and the naturalness and the spontaneity. I'm letting you know out there, all you speech teachers out there, the ums, the ahs and the utterances are beautiful because they are a reflection of the real and true self.
Mm.
But you've still got to know what you're going to say.
Mm.
So this is where the preparation of the dot points, but there'll come a time you start to take the dot points up there and they're still there as your safety, there'll come a day where, guess what, I know what the three dot points are. I'm going to leave them behind.
You can take them
and
out
on
away.
That day, you just let it rip. And all you got to do is remember the three dot points and you got faith that you will remember it. That's, you know.
Mm. You have confidence.
Yeah, yes, please. Speech teacher.
I love that, exactly what you've said. And remembering the most important people in the room is the audience.
Yeah.
Mm. What message do you want them to take away?
Yeah.
And why are you up there delivering that message?
Yeah.
Mm.
And it's an honor to be in front of people to share something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got to be all about the audience.
Yeah.
And when you're writing a speech and getting your ideas and putting it together, it's what outcome is this for the audience?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's not what you know.
Yeah. How helpful is it to be delivering a message that you really believe in?
Yeah. How helpful is it?
I'm just sort of thinking sometimes when you're in, say you're in a debate situation, it's just your job to present this certain argument.
That's fun.
You know?
Oh, it's fun. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm no matter whether I agree with it or not, I get passionate about it. And I had to do a debate recently and it was on a subject that I totally disagreed with. And
okay,
I had to be on the affirmative.
Yeah.
And I had to find the points that made it that somebody might argue that it would be an affirmative. But once I got into the argument, hey, and I won. but I didn't believe a single word I said. But I had passion in the way I delivered it.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest that those situations are like the impromptu speeches. You go to a Toastmaster meeting and they give you any topic. There's sometimes I've got a topic and I got no friggin' idea what the topic is, what it even means over there. But you can still speak about it because you're experimenting with your mind's imagination. They're just play and experiments, but they're good experiments to develop faith in your imagination. Ultimately, I'm going to look you in the eye and say, you never speak about anything you don't believe in. You always speak about the stuff that you believe in because it's the only way real heart can come through to the audience that can penetrate their heart, spirit, and soul.
I suppose I can see that, and I would agree with it.
Yeah. Your authenticity cannot be compromised in the process of selling.
No.
It cannot, because the customer, the listener, the audience will pick it up. And that will become the disconnect. Read it out. Read the book. The book says.
So my book is Good Girls Do Sell, and it is the modern businesswoman's guide to authentic selling.
And okay, good, great. So in one sentence, I mean one sentence. By the way, I said that about 10 minutes ago. And now we've hardly progressed nowhere. In one sentence, what does that mean? Say it, please.
To be authentic.
You know, well, what does that mean there? The modern businesswoman's guide to authentic selling. What are you saying to us? What's the message there?
I'm saying be real.
Yeah.
Don't treat it like a sale.
Yeah.
The less you treat it like a sale, the more successful you'll be.
Yeah.
Because I'm about building relationships and I want relationships with people that I can continue to help them in the future.
Yeah.
So that's what being authentic means to me.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move it on to a few other topics over here because we're moving towards the end of the podcast there's been so many actionables here, Chippy. I'm excited.
I think the money's worth is there, you know.
So personal branding, in one sentence, Janine, that you coach. What is personal branding?
It's how you are perceived by other people. Really, that's the simplest way to describe it. You can do whatever you can do, but it's all got to do with how someone else perceives you as your brand.
Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you want other people to perceive you favorably, what is an uncompromisable component of your branding?
Be consistent. I had people challenge me about being vocal about different opinions I have on different topics, particularly over the last 3 years. I got quite vocal about different things. Had someone challenge me to say, if you do that, you're going to lose customers. And I had a thought about it and I said, what I do is teach people to speak their truth and their belief, and then I'm not going to. So that was not consistent, it wasn't congruent, it wasn't being real, it wasn't authentic.
I'll give you an example of exactly what you're talking about. I've had a few friends who have suggested that in this podcast that I play more the role of host and less the role of occasionally moving into trainer, coach, educator. You know? And I've thought about that and I understand what they are saying and even played with their suggestion that I pull back. And then I said to myself, but wait a minute, that wouldn't be Bernie. And I do think, and Chip, you understand this, and this is why we're such a good partnership, I believe, is that the Bernie brand is part of the way I host. And if that means that I'm occasionally going to slip into coaching and educating and feeding off our guests and offering even some added value to what our guests say, then that is a component of the podcast. It's what differentiates the podcast.
Absolutely.
I totally agree. And plus, your name is on your podcast as well.
There is that. There is certainly that.
And yours,
But to key off that, and I think the answer is obvious, but I'd like to hear you articulate it. How important is it to make sure that your personal brand is always an authentic expression of who you are? And that doesn't mean all of you, by the way.
No.
There are levels of, but how important is it that it's always an authentic expression of yourself?
People a lot of people may not note, may not understand why they may disconnect from someone. It's the subconscious of someone might go, oh, I used to follow Chip and Bernie, but now I don't. And I'm not sure why, but there's a bit of a disconnect there. So if, and that's often when we move away from that true consistent self.
That
they will notice it probably more than you identify with it. So it's really important when a lot of people talk branding, they're talking colors and all of that space. And it's really important when you do shift from one to the other in a brand, in a color, in a delivery, and who you are, who you present as, that you don't take people too far away. It's still got to be authentically you.
Janine, we are approaching the end of the podcast.
I think we could be. I think this conversation could go on for hours. I think it has actually.
No, it hasn't. It's an hour and 18 minutes so far. But as we move towards the end, we must always move it directly in touch with our objectives of the podcast. You know, what strategies, what actions, routines, ways of seeing the world have you discovered that help any of our listeners and the two boys here in front of you to become sustainably a more joyful being? So that's my question. How do we create, in your eyes, an action or two, uncompromisable, fundamental, in order to create greater sustainable inner joy?
Can I have more than one sentence?
Okay.
give her the space, Bern.
Again, a certain consistency and build routines into your life. Have routines.
What's in that routine?
Move the body. Move the body every day. That's whatever that looks like for you. It could be going dancing. It could be walking. Whatever it is, but move the body every day. And we move that. We build the serotonin and get outside. I think that's such an important factor as well within my day. So they're two things that I do every single day: is to move the body and get outside.
Yeah.
Do you do those at a consistent time, or do you allow yourself to do those, so shift those around?
I shift them around. I'm on a bit of a mission at the last 3 weeks where I do 5,000 steps before breakfast. And when I've got to be at a breakfast meeting at 6:30 a.m., it's dark now at 4:30 to be out getting those 5,000 steps. But so it's a bit a mission. And then I accumulate more steps later in the day well. But however it looks like for you is that one thing that I have to do, and I really suggest other people do, is get more knowledge each day. Listen to the podcast, learn from someone, read a book, listen to a book. I do not travel anywhere in my car unless I'm listening to a book or something.
Or
100% of the time. It's the same when I'm walking. And what that actually does, when people go, well, just enjoy around you. I can enjoy around. But what that does, it lets you focus on what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you start thinking about somewhere else, all of a sudden the book's gone past and you've distracted. So it keeps you in the space of being in the now. And I think that's a really important factor for a daily thing as well.
Yeah, wonderful.
So that's, that's my – and I connect with people every day as well. So that's me as a outgoing extrovert. I have to do that.
Chipster, we covered a lot of good topics today.
Oh, lots of ground, eh?
Yeah, and Chip's take-home pay. Just give us a little clue as to one or two things that you think might surface, mate, that you're going to be suggesting to our listeners. Hey, you got to consider this.
Really want to use this as an opportunity to dive into the idea of working on yourself is literally a means to save the world.
Yeah, yeah. Can you elaborate on that just a fraction, mate? Because I've got the sentence, but I just want to know what that really means. What's your thinking behind that?
I think you can only build a wall one brick at a time.
Yeah.
And to key off what Janine was saying about the spiral formation, moving toward a world that's full. Imagine if we had a world that was full of rigorously introspective people who understood themselves and others so well that distrust just did not exist, that we all knew we could rely on ourselves and that made us able to rely on others.
Yeah.
Imagine the connectedness there. That is the way we save the world, one person at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chipster, please prick my ego, mate, because that's what the podcast is about.
I think so.
Isn't it, mate?
You absolutely.
Know? And, I think it is ego speaking. But, mate, I can look at you. Oh, mate, just look at you, mate, and go, we should be proud of what we're attempting to do here.
I agree.
You know, because we're just saying to everyone out there, let's all have a good look at ourselves,
mm-hmm.
eh? And have a look at how we're existing in our lives currently and just saying, is there a modified existence out there? Can we make a few changes and shifts in which we first become a more joyful, loving human being so that we've got a little bit more to give out there to the evolving world.
Exactly. To live with more meaning.
So, mate, inadvertently there, you just made me proud, brother.
You made me proud every day, mate.
But I tell you who should also make us proud is Janine Vosper, mate. Great to have you on board,
privilege.
Janine. And
thank you. I've enjoyed it. It's been a whole lot of fun.
Isn't it great exploring?
Absolutely. And you know what? I used to just have a glass of wine and be with friends and I'd talk about these things and they would go way over their heads.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to be able to sit and share with get the ideas and have the round table with things and be challenged. And I love it. Absolutely love it.
It doesn't matter that out of our 8,000 listeners, it's gone straight over the head of 6,000 of them. There's 2,000 out there who got it, Janine.
That's right. 2,001 now. That's all we need. And one more next week.
Talking about one more next week, I tell you what, we got so many guests lined up that they just want to be on a journey with Bernie and the Chipster. We can't wait to deliver another beautiful episode to you. It's just around the corner, dear folks. Thank you for being a part of this one. Blessings to you all. Get out there and spread the love, eh? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bern. Thank you, Janine. And thank you, listeners, you filigreed geese winging overhead in the majestic V formation of self-development. Thank you so much for joining me, Chip Lachlan Huddy, for another edition of Chip's Take Home Pay, where I bring together the strongest themes of the podcast you just listened to and offer some hard, fast, concrete action steps so that you can start applying the wisdom of our guests to your own life, not next week, not tomorrow, but right now. And today, I think we have to talk about the striking benefits of joy. I want to key off something Bern said earlier in the episode about the greatest gift that you can offer the world being the best version of yourself. See, that's an extremely true proposition. The greatest gift you can offer the world is the best version of yourself. And we hear it quite a bit in the self-development space, so much so, I fear, that it's lost all its meaning. It's slipped into platitude. So today, we're going to put some meat back on its bones. Why is the best version of yourself the greatest gift you can offer the world? Well, it turns out it's because of joy. See, the best version of yourself is the joyful version of yourself. It's the presence of joy in your life that creates the space for those other aspects of the modified existence, purpose, genuinely wanting the best for yourself and others, to flourish. Now, this is something that most of us can intuit because we're always our best selves when we feel at our best, right? But you know how I feel about intuition. It's a bit wishy-washy for my taste. So let's look to the science, shall we? I found a fantastic study today. It's called Global Variation in Subjective Well-being Predicts 7 Forms of Altruism. And it's by Sean Rhodes, Devin Gunter, Rebecca M. Ryan, and Abigail A. Marsh. We'll link to it in the show notes. Now, what these researchers did in this study was they examined the relationship between people's subjective well-being, i.e. happiness, and their likelihood to be altruistic, to be good to other people in seven different ways. So like donating to charity, helping strangers, donating bone marrow, to name just a few. And guess what they found? The happier people felt, the more they would be altruistic. Happiness, joy, literally makes you a better person. So here's today's action step, and it could not be simpler. Commit this very day to doing something that brings you joy. Maybe it's sharing a meal with someone you love. Maybe it's finally treating yourself to that movie you've been waiting to see for years. Maybe it's working on that old car you've been fixing up for the past few months. Maybe it's a glass of wine and a few squares of dark chocolate and a few chapters of that book you've been reading on and off all year. Maybe it's a wild mountain bike ride with that mate that's just as nuts as you. Whatever it is, do it. Make time for it. And enjoy it. Bring that joy into your life. Now, here's the hard bit. You got to do something like that every day from now on. I know it's hard. I know we're all busy. I know that there are a million things on the to-do list, but you will never get your days back, and it is a tragedy to let even one of them pass without moments of joy. You owe it to yourself, but remember that you also owe it to the rest of us, because the joyful person is the best person that they can be, and the best person you can be is the greatest gift you can offer the world. And that's not my intuition talking. That's science. All right, that's all from me, beautiful people, and I'll just leave you with the usual requests to please leave us a star rating and review on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or another podcast app of your choice. We would very much appreciate a 5-star review, because that helps the algorithm suggest us to more listeners. But if you can't in all good conscience give us a 5-star review just yet, we'd still appreciate your honest and constructive feedback in that review. We'd also really appreciate you heading over to our website at journeywithbernie.co. That's journeywithbernie.co, not .com. journeywithbernie.co. And there you'll find the show notes for this and every other episode. And you'll also be able to sign up for some free gifts from our superb guests. And you'll also be able to find ways to get involved with all the good work in which we're getting involved, which could be raising money for Jimmy Lingwood's worthy documentary, A Light in the Slaughterhouse. Could be feeding the homeless with Margarita Stowers. Could just be finding your tranquility at one of our own punk rock Buddhist monk Chad Foreman's meditation retreats. Head on over, check it out, journeywithbernie.co. Did a lot of work on that one myself, and I'd be mighty grateful if you took a look. That's it for this week, beautiful people. I'm Chip Huddy. This has been Chip's Take Home Pay, and I do hope you found some pay worth taking home. As always, my friends, auf Wiedersehen, and just remember...